The first sign you see of a deadly tsunami, paradoxically, isn't a wave. If the trough of the unstoppable incoming energy reaches the shore before the crest, there is no wave. Water instead recedes dramatically and attractively, luring beachgoers to a seafloor that has never seen the air before. But moments later, the rest of the energy arrives. A colossal curtain of power slows from over 500 miles per hour to just 50, bunching up as it does so and rising with the seafloor, building up destructive capability behind a molecular traffic jam. On March 11, 2011, a tsunami resulting from a 9.1 magnitude earthquake would end up inflicting the worst single loss of life in Japan since a nuclear bomb was dropped on the city of Hiroshima in 1945. This unprecedented catastrophe created two types of ghosts. Ghosts that would haunt the land of the rising sun to this day. The spirits of those lost in the tsunami, and the invisible specter of atomic radiation from the second worst nuclear disaster in history. This is the true story of the hauntings of Fukushima. Two weeks before the start of the summer of 2011, at 2:46 p.m., a so-called undersea megathrust earthquake shifted a gargantuan section of Earth approximately 72 kilometers east of the Oshika Peninsula of Tohoku, Japan. 32 kilometers below the seafloor, 10,000 billion joules of energy would explode from the Earth in the 6 minutes that would follow. It had been building up there for over 1,000 years. Released was a total energy equivalent to burning the entire Earth's fossil fuel reserves all at once. This unfathomable energy, fathoms below the ocean's surface, sent invisible power out at almost 500 miles per hour. When these waves made landfall in Japan, they carried with them walls of water up to 50 feet high. Before the day was over, 217 square miles of Japan would flood. Water would be found 6 miles inland. In just minutes, over 100,000 buildings would be destroyed and millions would lose access to running water and electricity. Official numbers from 2021 report that in one day, 19,747 people would lose their lives. Most of them would drown, and most of those people would be elderly. Over 2,000 people are still missing today. The 2011 earthquake would become the largest Japan ever recorded, and the world's fourth largest earthquake since records began over 100 years ago. To quote Naoto Kan, the then Prime Minister of Japan, "In the 65 years after the end of World War II, this is the toughest and most difficult crisis for Japan." End quote. And then came the meltdowns. A literally earth-shattering earthquake and a flood taller than most buildings is the kind of combined event that is rarely designed for. The Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, first commissioned in 1971, is a large nuclear facility consisting of 6 boiling water reactors. Nestled directly against the Pacific Ocean, Fukushima Daiichi is one of the largest nuclear power plants in the world. And like all nuclear facilities, it was engineered with safety in mind. Structures, designs, and procedures tailored against even extremely unlikely dangers like large earthquakes, floods, and terrorist plots. What it was not designed for, however, for the sake of practicality, was a simultaneous combination of more than one of these events. Nothing is engineered for this. The 2011 earthquake and tsunami, therefore, was something like a chance asteroid strike, far from ordinary and far from prepared for. Slim-to-nothing chances, combined with human error, are what would create the conditions for the only other event in human history to receive the highest rating on the international nuclear events scale. Japan was about to have its very own Chernobyl. When sensors at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant detected the fourth most powerful earthquake in recorded history, the active reactors on site automatically inserted enough control rods in the cores to absorb the neutrons feeding the chain reactions and shut them down. This also meant, however, a sudden loss of power, and so the emergency diesel generators at the bottom of the plant, just 5 meters above the waterline, switched on. All according to plan. Approximately 60 minutes later, however, a wall of water over 50 feet above sea level slammed into the plant. Fukushima was now drowning in floodwaters well over twice what was considered a worst-case scenario during design. The diesel generators, the source of power needed to move water around the plant and continue cooling the reactors all the way down, failed almost immediately. Before the day was out, coolant water would be boiled away, nuclear fuel would be exposed to the air, and the temperature inside Reactor 1 would rise to half as hot as the surface of the sun. Once Fukushima started drowning, its fate was sealed. In the days to come, both reactors 1 and 3 would be rocked by powerful explosions, the result of hydrogen gas buildup from materials evaporating during their meltdowns. Reactor 2 would also melt down on March 14th, and then explode on March 15th. For the third time ever, corium, the most dangerous substance in the world, had been created. This radioactive lava oozed to the bottom of the containment vessels of reactors 1 through 3 and probably ate its way through 14 centimeters of steel to pool on basement floors. I say probably because to this day we don't know where all the corium ended up. What was known was that nuclear fuel was no longer contained, and radiation was being released into the environment. By the explosions, by the floodwaters, and by the reactors themselves. But the radiation released at Fukushima wasn't the only invisible force that began haunting Japan in 2011. It is impossible to convey in words just how much was lost when the tsunami hit Japan. The raw, uncaring power of the water took everything. Cars, homes, sidewalks, hospitals, banks, scrapbooks, pets, holiday plans, mothers and their daughters, fathers and their sons, the entire infrastructure of a society. But for everything that was taken, something remained. According to foreign correspondent and writer Richard Lloyd Perry, who had been living in Japan for the last 18 years, shortly after the disaster, survivors of the tsunami started seeing ghosts. And a lot of them. Spirits were allegedly wandering deserted beaches and standing slumped in waterlogged jackets on street corners. A woman, who undoubtedly died thrashing and alone in turbulent waters, would occasionally join her surviving friends for tea. When the spirit left, they said, the pillow she was sitting on was drenched with seawater. Many survivors had stories like these. It almost seemed like an epidemic, Richard Perry reported. After 2011, ghost stories in Japan's hardest-hit cities became commonplace. The tsunami, in a very real way, was haunting them.
When night falls and the light has vanished, there are ghosts wandering around this area. Unfortunately, I am able to see them.
It doesn't really matter whether or not you think ghosts are real or whether spirits exist. They were and are real enough to the survivors. When faced with death and destruction beyond your ability to describe, it's understandable, maybe even inevitable, that grief and trauma express themselves in ways that you simply cannot explain logically. Japan now had a ghost problem. There were so many reports, in fact, that academics started writing journal articles about the phenomenon. Priests and monks were being called upon to exorcise spirits and cleanse those apparently possessed by them. It is not uncommon, says Dr. Charles R. Figley of the School of Social Work at Tulane University, for fellow survivors to have common reactions, be they sounds, smells, or paranormal sightings. Ghosts, he says, are more tolerable than the void created by death. Writer Richard Perry also reported on one survivor in the Japanese city of Kurihara. The man now hates the rain because he sees the faces of those that died in the puddles. As a quick aside, if you want to know more about the survivors, cultural impact, and ghost sightings of the 2011 earthquake and tsunami in Japan, I recommend reading Richard Perry's full book on the subject, Ghosts of the Tsunami. The worst thing that could happen at a nuclear power plant is the accidental release of radioactive material into the environment, as it is the material in the reactor's fuel rods, like uranium, that emits the energy and particles that can damage and/or destroy living tissue. At Fukushima Daiichi, this material was escaping in three ways. Some of it was being vented into the atmosphere as workers tried to prevent the kind of gas explosions that shook reactor units 1 and 3. Unit 2 was spared an explosion because of this emergency venting. Other radioactive materials were flung into the environment by the explosions that could not be prevented. The majority of the radiation released by the disaster escaped in these two ways. The rest of the accident's radiation was being discharged into the sea as contaminated cooling water, the very same water being pumped in to keep the failed cores from failing further. Hundreds of thousands of tons of contaminated water would be evacuated into the Pacific from storage tanks in the first few months after the tsunami. This approach was understandably incredibly controversial because the coast of Fukushima Prefecture has some of the strongest ocean currents in the world. Radioactive water dumped here would inevitably spread everywhere. According to the French Institute for Radiological Protection and Safety, water seeping out of Fukushima was the most important individual oceanic emissions of artificial radioactivity ever observed. Japan was now being haunted by a ghost it had not felt since 1945, and people were scared. But did they have to be? Chernobyl, a noun now synonymous with disaster, is the only other event in human history to receive the highest rating on the nuclear disaster scale. It would be easy, then, to put Fukushima in the same sentence with Chernobyl. It would be easy, but it would also be misleading. While there were explosions that released radioactivity at Fukushima Daiichi, the reactor cores themselves didn't explode. Rather, they slowly melted down and oxidized over a number of days, which meant that materials were actually stuck in the building and not rocketed into the sky by explosions that lifted a 2 million kilogram lid like it was a paperweight. Comparing the two disasters directly, Fukushima released up to 90% less radiation than the cores that burned up in Pripyat in 1986. Less radiation means less harm. Chernobyl ended up spewing contaminants that affected areas up to 500 kilometers away. Fukushima's contaminants only spread 60 kilometers. The exclusion zone created by Chernobyl was 30 kilometers. In Japan, it was 20. Chernobyl, the worst nuclear disaster in history, may have directly and indirectly caused 4,000 deaths, and maybe many more than this. Numbers vary. Fukushima, on the other hand, according to every report and estimate, caused zero. No deaths. Measurements along Japanese coastlines also suggested that marine life would hardly be affected. The most at-risk people in the vicinity of the Japanese power plant wouldn't even experience radiation rates much higher than background. These comparisons are important because it's too easy to see Fukushima as an equivalent Chernobyl. It's not. There is consensus among scientists that the impact on health is minuscule, Japanese nuclear expert Michiaki Kai told news organization AFP. Still, it can't be said the risk is zero, which is what causes controversy. Despite the fact that the Fukushima disaster does not compare like you may think with Chernobyl, its influence still lingered in a similar way, like a ghost face in a puddle. Unlike Ukraine, Japan is one of the most densely populated places on the planet. Yes, the exclusion zone was smaller than Chernobyl's, as was the amount of radioactivity released, but it still meant that over 150,000 people had to leave their homes. Many thousands more relocated as a precaution. Potassium iodide tablets were distributed by the government. Food shipments to affected areas were halted. Japan had acted quickly to limit the possible health effects, and they were successful in that. But other damage had already been done, and may end up being irreversible. Contaminated soil could be shoveled away, water could be cleaned, but trust is much harder to recover. Surveys and testimonials agree that distrust of the Japanese government was and continues to be high, and that less than half of the evacuated residents plan to ever return to their homes. Those that do are mostly the elderly. They had more to lose. Young people are afraid to raise children in the exclusion zone. Signs installed with radiation detectors try to assure the public that areas are better, or are getting better, that it's safe to return. But reportedly, the government cleanup effort is widely viewed by the Japanese public as a kind of whitewashing, political theater for the 2021 Olympics. In 2015, almost 230,000 people were still relocated. This is the kind of cultural wound that cuts deeper than any alpha, beta, or gamma radiation. In 2016, writer Steve Featherstone interviewed a man in Nihara, a town inside the Fukushima prefecture. The man had returned to again manage his restaurant, the only place with drinks in town. His daughter decided not to come with him. Behind the bar, Featherstone noticed that the clock on the wall was frozen at 2:47 p.m., the very same minute the earthquake struck the town half a decade beforehand. The man said he had vowed to never reset it, at least not until life in his town returned to normal. Ghosts took all kinds of forms after Fukushima. By December 2011, the reactors at Fukushima Daiichi achieved a so-called cold shutdown state. Thanks to cooling and control efforts, it became physically impossible for nuclear fissions to begin again. And today, the plant is stable. The three melted cores are still emitting heat, but no more than that of a small car. No significant atmospheric releases have occurred. Water is still injected into the failure, but for dust suppression more than anything else. The plant itself has been deforested, cleaned, and covered with resin and concrete to protect groundwater. Literal mountains of contaminated topsoil have been collected. A frozen wall of soil was created around the plant like an ice moat to prevent groundwater leakage. As of 2018, there were 5,000 daily workers at the power plant continuing on its decommission, an engineering effort of incredible scope and scale, an effort that will take decades to complete, if ever. And today, 95% of the facility doesn't even require face masks or coveralls for radiation safety. There are shops and cafeterias on site. A sign at the front entrance forbids playing Pokemon Go. It's a practical and foreseeable end to what was an unforeseeable disaster. That is, unless someone did see it coming. TEPCO, or the Tokyo Electric Power Company, is the utility company that runs the power plant and is overseeing the cleanup today, in step with the Japanese government. To say that what happened to the reactors couldn't have been prepared for and/or engineered for would be a lie. If what happened at Fukushima was anyone's fault beyond what happened in fault lines a few kilometers outside of Japan, it was TEPCO's. 1991, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission warns TEPCO that emergency power could be lost as a result of flooding. No action is taken. October 1991, one of the two backup generators of Reactor 1 fails due to flooding. An engineer warns his supervisors that a tsunami could seriously damage their generators. TEPCO installs doors. 2004, the Cabinet Office of the Japanese government warns TEPCO that tsunamis much taller than those planned for were indeed possible. TEPCO does not revise safety protocols. 2006, an in-house report recommends that TEPCO take safety measures against a potential tsunami of the exact same size that would hit 5 years later. The TEPCO leadership does not make the results of the study public as, quote, announcing information about uncertain risks would create anxiety, end quote. 2008, another in-house study identifies an immediate need to protect the facility from flooding due to larger tsunami waves than predicted. The prediction is not taken seriously by TEPCO. March 11, 2011. A tsunami wave the exact height warned about strikes the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, causing the second worst radiological disaster in human history. It goes without saying that TEPCO has faced intense criticism for its handling of the accident. On July 5th of 2012, an independent investigation concluded that TEPCO failed to meet basic safety requirements. The company didn't have proper risk assessment, didn't have plans for substantial collateral damage, and didn't have a realistic evacuation plan. But TEPCO wasn't undone by the disaster. That same month of 2012, the Japanese government infused TEPCO with 1 trillion yen to keep the company from collapsing. Its collapse would have seriously interrupted the supply of electricity to Tokyo. The money would also go towards the decommissioning of the plant. TEPCO itself would soon become part nationalized as a way for the government to step in and oversee damages and the decommissioning process. But it wouldn't be until October 12, 2012, over a year after the initial disaster, that TEPCO would admit to any wrongdoing. The company finally admitted that it hadn't taken the necessary measures for fear of lawsuits and protests. But they got those anyway. The Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant may now in fact be stable, but it is anything but solved. The plant will never be totally safe until the melted nuclear fuel is removed, and immediately after the disaster, no one knew exactly where it ended up. It wouldn't be until 6 years later, in 2017, that a remote-controlled and radiation-shielded submersible would find the final resting place of some of Reactor 3's corium. A year later, melted uranium oxide was found in Reactor 2. Many robots attempted these explorations, but many of their electronics failed. The radiation inside these reactors today would still kill a human in just minutes. TEPCO therefore estimates it might take 40 years before all the fuel is found and removed. It would happen sooner if the technologies to efficiently do so existed today. They simply don't. The ghosts of Fukushima's reactors will require brand new technologies before they are finally exercised. Nearly every culture on Earth has a relationship with the unreal, some implicit understanding that death is not the end. In Japan, many survivors of the 2011 earthquake and tsunami believe that their epidemic of ghosts was somehow related to how their friends, family, and neighbors died. The rushing waters took them before they were ready, and now restless, ethereal forms wandered in their place. In the summer of 2011, a cab driver was shocked to see a young woman hailing him. He was driving through a particularly hard-hit area, and he had very few customers. The woman got into his car, and they took off. The cab driver noticed that she was wearing a heavy winter coat in the middle of summer, and it was soaking wet, but it hadn't rained in days. The girl told him to take her to the Minamihama district, which he knew was almost completely abandoned.
Sono area wa hotondo sore desu yo ne.
There was a long silence. Then, in a voice that sounded like she was shivering as she did so, the girl responded,
"Watashi wa shindan no desu ka?"
The cab driver, now terrified, turned around to look at the young woman. But no one was there. Until next time. Thank you so much to the very nerdy staff at the facility for their direct and substantial support in the creation of this here video. Today, especially, I want to recognize research assistant Laura Sandburn and visiting scholar Kupara Sippy. If you want to join the facility, if you want to join me on Discord every day, if you want behind-the-scenes photos, if you want to drape on a silky white lab coat and watch private members-only live streams with me, not like that. You can go to patreon.com/KyleHill to join the facility staff today. And hey, if you support us just enough, you get your name on Aria here each and every video. And as you can see, there's literally hundreds and hundreds of you, so I have no idea how I'm going to pass that to. I know that there's still a feeling that Fukushima, what happened at Fukushima Daiichi, is equivalent to Chernobyl. And yes, it is in the same scale, and it was the second worst disaster in human history. But you must understand that the scope of what was released, just in terms of measurement, and how many people were affected, how many people died as a result, which are zero, and is tracked to be zero in the future, this puts it almost not even in the same sentence. Like I say, it's kind of misleading to use this as another example, as another signpost like Chernobyl is and was. So I guess what I'm getting at is, especially for these kind of discussions, context matters. Keep the context. Thanks for watching.